Bienvenidos and welcome to the Jacobin Sports Show. I'm your host, Matthew Miranda. Coming off a pretty tough week, so when I tell you that I'm happy to be here right now talking sports with you, I really, really am so happy to be here talking sports with you. Plus, StreamYard has changed their business model, the service that I used to record these episodes. It used to be free and unlimited, much like I was. But now they want $20 a month that I don't really have to give them. So it turns out I only have 45 minutes of airtime left until it resets on August 5th. So let's make it count, loves. This episode is all about the question, are pro sports even ethical? I don't know if they ever were, but I'm interested in this episode in particular in just, you know, it started, I wrote about this on the Patreon the other day. I've been kvetching a lot lately about the WNBA not paying for its teams to fly private charter. And the WNBA is not doing it because a lot of embarrassing reasons. But, and I started thinking about how jet travel in general is, you know, per unit of gas or whatever, like terrible, like worse than auto, worse than, I guess, somehow commercial planes even. Like, it's just a terrible thing in general for the environment. And if you've seen the news at any point anywhere in the world this summer or winter, depending on what part of the world you're in, I believe it was 152 degrees the other day in Iran at the airport. Phoenix has had records as far as days, I think, over the heat index being over 100. Miami has had a record for days over 100, and that is not a dry heat down there. Even where I am right now on Long Island, pretty hot, but also, I guess, because increases in temperature, like per degree of Celsius, that it goes up, like the 7% more water vapor gets evaporated, so you're getting more and more rain. I'm staying at a house where I'm teaching this summer that got some flooding the other day, just from, it was heavy rain for a few hours, very unusual, heavy amounts of rain. There was a tornado watch, which does not really happen often on Long Island. And basement got, you know, kind of flooded. And that's an absolute, you know, 0.1 on the scale of things that are happening around the world climactically. But thinking about that, seeing that happening, and then thinking about sports has made me question, and I used to always wonder this, like, you know, what is the end of sports? Like, what will cause it? Well, not that one thing will cause it, but this can't go on forever. And are we at the point where it's no longer ethical for it to? You can cover any number of issues related to the world of pro sports to argue against its continued existence. Financially, watching sports has become more and more inaccessible for many people, despite the fact that across the board, profits continue to go up and up and up. You have fewer and fewer fans seeing any benefit to this increase in profit that they bring and the love and attention that they bring to their teams and these arenas and these leagues. The owners get more and more. The players get more and more. The media gets more and more. The fans get nothing but more and more asked of them. There's a company called US Betting Report that just did a study. They have something that they call a fan cost index, and they concluded my beloved New York Knicks are the most expensive team to support across in the NBA. To take a family of four on average to a Knicks game, and I know everyone's not a family of four, but just, you know, if you want to divide it by four because you're alone, it still applies. But if you take a family of four to a Knicks game, you get four average price tickets, two small beers, four small sodas, four hot dogs, an hour of parking, which is bullshit because no sport takes less than multiple hours, two game programs, and the two cheapest adult-sized adjustable caps. Average price to do that at a Knicks game for one game is $936.72, which is a 46% increase from 11 years ago. That is insanity. A family of four, almost $1,000. To get a bunch of average stuff, fucking mid sodas and shit, and an hour of parking doesn't even make sense. I saw the Knicks in March this year because someone was very kind enough to gift me their ticket to the game. I spent so on a to attend a game that I did not spend a dime on the ticket, and I didn't buy any food at the game. I am not a rich girl, and I wanted to cut costs as much as I could. So I got like a couple slices outside the arena, but I didn't buy anything inside. I didn't get a drink. I didn't get food. I got nothing. I got a free ticket. I don't live in New York, so I had to take a train down. Between the train and a hotel, I spent over $600 to see that one game. Now, as I said, I am not a Rockefeller. I've taken one vacation in the last 15 years of my life. That game that I saw in March was the first Knick game I had seen live in almost 30 years. So I treated this very much like a luxury. But $1,000 on average to take a family a game, or if it's just you, on average, $250. If it's you and a friend, maybe $500. To shell out that much money as the average cost of a game, that's not posited as a luxury. That's the norm. That's the standard. And I don't know how many people can do that. And this is pricing out the people who are the reason that all of these leagues have grown over the years. Another argument against the continued existence of pro sports, it is literally the last leg propping up the succubus that is American cable television. The company called Insider Intelligence estimates that at the end of this year, 54%, a majority of Americans, will have cut the cable cord by the end of 2023. This is significant for a lot of reasons. Cable conglomerates control more than just sports and entertainment. They control often news divisions. And whatever you think of the bias or even utility of, you know, ABC News or like the nightly news on CBS and NBC, it's still a place where millions of people depend on for information. If you've ever seen one of my favorite movies of all time, Network, the whole movie is about what happens when the bean counters, the bottom liners, who only care about profit, gain control of a public trust like the news. There's obviously, I'm not sitting here trying to argue that like we need ABC and NBC and CBS News because they're so committed to legitimate progressive, like they're not, but it's still a place where people go for some information that if you sell it, well, here's what I'm getting at. Bob Iger, who's the CEO of Disney, sparked a lot of fear among people at ABC News specifically that that he's going to be selling ABC, the news division, he might flip ESPN, other properties, because Disney apparently has decided they don't make enough money. And instead of taking out like a paper route, they're going to sell all this stuff. So when Iger heard that people at ABC News were freaking out, this is what he said to reassure them. Quote, "I'm ridiculously passionate about news. It's important to this company. We need to figure out how it makes a transition into streaming. And I happen to believe we will endure. It's too good. It's too important. And it's really fun." End quote. Okay. Any future timeline that results from a billionaire transitioning TV news into being something, quote, really fun, that is the darkest timeline. Whichever one it is, that is the darkest one. P.S., Bob Iger, in case you didn't know, is currently spending $7 million to renovate his $33 million mansion in Los Angeles. Sports remaining so popular and profitable is really the iron lung that is keeping cable TV alive at all. And as long as cable TV stays alive, people like Bob Iger are still in positions to make decisions about how to cut it up, how to change it, how to make it really fun. I cannot imagine a darker dystopia than what Disney's CEO thinks really fun network news looks like. I can think of what it looks like. I don't want to. Sports media itself, and I can talk about this from personal experience. The sports media game itself has really become a cesspool of just intrusive ads and poverty wages. If you go on a site like Sports Illustrated or Fansided or any number of particularly newspaper sports sections, you need literally like digital blinders just to even find the few words on the screen that are part of the article you're ostensibly reading. Everything is ads. Every single thing is ads. Now let me contrast difference between corporate sports media and a worker-owned example. So for 9 years, I wrote for SB Nation, which is owned by Vox. The first 4 years that I worked for them, I was unpaid. The last 5 years, I was paid. In the 9 years that I wrote for Vox, the one and only, there were only two times ever that anyone from the company ever reached out to me personally about anything. One was, the first time was 4 months into COVID, when I hadn't written anything for over a month. Per my contract, I didn't have to, because my contract said when the Knicks season is over, I didn't have to write anything. And the whole NBA was suspended because of COVID. There was literally no news. There was literally nothing happening. And even when the league announced that they were going to do that partial finish to the season before the bubble, the Knicks weren't one of the teams invited. There was literally nothing for me to do per my contract. On top of that, I was struggling with double pneumonia very badly. After that, I got bronchitis. I got single pneumonia, which was actually worse than the double. I did not know single can be worse than double, but it can be. It's just about the degree of intensity. In single is one lung and double is two, I think, but you can have terrible pneumonia like in one lung. So I heard from them then, and then there was a point when I was having a very difficult mental week, and I like was kind of writing about it and tweeting about it quite a bit, and my editor, who was a good man and a friend of mine, I think reached out to let them know, like, hey, Miranda is hurting, like, what can we do? And then someone reached out and was like, okay, like, you can take a month off. 9 years, that's what I heard from them. The 5 years that I was paid, I worked on average, I would say, 10 hours a week. Certainly there were weeks it was much busier, but because the Knicks usually suck, there were also long stretches where I didn't have to write about them at all because their season was done. I still did when I wanted to, but I wasn't obligated to. So I would guess on average, I spent about 10 hours a week writing about the Knicks, watching games, recapping, writing articles. On average, I made a little over $100 a week. So a lot of weeks, I was averaging maybe $10 an hour. A lot of weeks, I was averaging less than minimum wage. Weeks where there were, you know, trade deadline weeks, or if they're in the playoffs, something big is happening where you were working like a lot more than 10 hours, you were still making basically $105 a week. I thought if I do my best and I just keep churning out good stuff, you know, my merit will be rewarded. Someone will notice me. Someone will scoop me up. Nope. In fact, not only were there virtually no promotions of anyone I knew in the 9 years that I was there, but after California passed it was a law or a proposition that essentially made companies start treating freelancers as employees with rights, Vox's response was to lay off pretty much their entire staff at SB Nation sites for teams based in California, and then conducted interviews and rehired like skeleton crews or whatever motley mix of the privileged and the masochistic they could find. They laid off tons of people rather than raise their standard to meet them. The last year that I worked for Vox, they were constantly harassing me through my overworked and underpaid boss, especially to push and push and push for more content. So that's 9 years of Vox. That was my experience. The worker-run site that I write for now is called The Strict.land. I've been there 3 years. I already make more money there than I ever did at Vox. The work environment is insanely human. Like, my editor is constantly nice, generous, open. His inclination is always against. It took me a while to decompress and realize, like, this person is not pushing me to write every single thing. Like, we actually write less content because he wants it to be better quality. We don't write about every stupid thing that happens. We're not trying to hit a quota like they have at Vox. I already make more there than I made after 9 years at Vox. This pod itself, comparing Jacobin Sports Show versus my other pod. My other pod is with a company called Believe. Believe has become a very big, they have some really big pods, and they cover so many teams. Sometimes they have multiple pods for the same team. when they hired me and my co-host, they told us they were going to hire also an ex-Nick, that there'd be a former Nick on the show with us, because that would help with ratings. And we wouldn't make huge money to start. It's not Change Your Life money, but like, it's money that can pay a bill. And I'm like, yo, I am not above getting help with my bills. If I can talk about the Knicks and cover anything, it could be my phone bill, any, I don't care, any bill, awesome, I'll do it. Okay. There's never been a Nick. There's never been, I've only heard in about 2 or 3 years with them, the only time we've ever heard anything from them is when they were pushing us to upgrade our microphone, our microphones, and they were not contributing a dime to helping us replace our microphones. They were just pushing us to do it. And as far as what I make from Believe, the only bill that I can pay with what I make monthly from them is if I went to McDonald's bi-weekly and off of the value meal got 2 McDoubles and a high C, what I make at Believe would probably cover it. That's what it would cover. Whereas here at Jacobin, even since it became Patreon-based, which is much less than what we were making when it was run by Jacobin itself, I make 4 to 5 times through the Patreon here what I did with Believe. So just 2 examples from one person of the difference between, that's the corporate media. And that's not just me. I'm a nobody, and that's how it is to me. But like, we've had people on like Chris Herring, Dan Devine, Howard Beck. These are top people in the field, at least of basketball writing. Beck has been in the last few years, I think, between ESPN, The Athletic. Now he writes for GQ. Herring was at 538. I think they closed or laid off a bunch of people. Now he's at Sports Illustrated. Devine went from someone to the, he was at Grantland, I think. He was at The Ringer. Now he's at Yahoo. Maybe he went back to Yahoo. And those are people who are lucky because they keep getting jobs. Whereas often, and it always seems to start with like ESPN, ESPN lays off 8% of their staff. Boom. Everyone else is going to lay off 8% of their staff. Everyone else is going to downsize. So with all the popularity and all the attention that's going on right now, globally, in the world of sports, you're still seeing people at the media level often being exploited for, just for whatever content they can make. Environmentally, is sports ethical? You have to question carbon. The carbon output alone makes it seem like no. Consider how many fans attend. The average NFL team can probably easily average 500,000-600,000 fans a year. NBA, NHL teams, 800,000. Major League Baseball teams average into the millions. Mets and Yankees used to be good. They would get 3.5, almost 4 million people a year. How much gas is spent by people to drive to those games? And this is not everyone should sit at home and like chew grass to have fun, but this is a question of a larger systemic, I think, quandary. Like, is this worth it? How much? So that's one. I gave you the numbers for one team in each sport. 600,000, 800,000, 2, 3 million. One team. So multiply that by 30, 32 teams. How much gas is spent by people who go to those games and put carbon into the atmosphere? And that's the, and that happens where public transit is an option, like the Mets and the Yankees, and even where it isn't, like the Dodgers. You take the Buffalo Bills. The Buffalo Bills, the greatest draw in Western New York. They don't play in Buffalo. They play in a suburb west of Buffalo called Orchard Park. The Bills draw fans from hours away in every direction. They get fans at their home games from Syracuse, from Rochester, from Batavia, from the South Towns, even Canada. A lot of these fans drive more than 100 miles both ways to see the Bills. And these people will go to 4, 6, all 8 home games. How much carbon goes in the air from those fans? What about the teams themselves? Think about all the teams across major American sports, the 4 that we mentioned, MLS, WNBA, European football, European soccer. You're talking literally over 10,000 trips a year made by teams traveling around the world to play sports, many of which are traveling in private charters. It's not just at the pro level. It's at the pseudo pro level. Colleges. Colleges continue to lose more and more state funding while more and more of their students go into usurious debt, earning degrees that are increasingly soulless or useless, while at the same time, the colleges are spending more and more money on whatever sports turns the highest profit. Northwestern. Northwestern's been a huge story in the media the last week or so because it turns out there's been a lot of disgusting hazing going on at Northwestern for a very long time. Their head coach, Pat Fitzgerald, who basically is like the Captain America of Northwestern football, he was arguably the greatest player in their history. Northwestern is not renowned for being like a tremendous sporting history, but it's in the Midwest. People care about it. And Pat Fitzgerald was like their football god as a player. And he's been a coach now for a very long time there. All these allegations have come out. Not allegations. I mean, former players, a number of them have testified. Sorry, it's not. I don't think it's in court. Have spoken to the media openly about not just even in football. Northwestern baseball also in trouble for a similar kind of environment. Meanwhile, Northwestern, which is not even a sports school, is going to spend about $800 million on a new stadium called Ryan Field. This is not a sports school, but this is where the money goes. And it's supposed to be big news that Northwestern is the first so-called Power Five football team that's building a stadium in the 21st century without using public funds. Like, we're supposed to be thrilled and grateful that a private school isn't using public funds to further enrich itself. But then again, maybe we should be grateful, given the number of pro teams who do build new stadiums with taxpayer money and then don't share any of the wealth, or share a disproportionately insignificant amount of that wealth. Another question that makes you have to think, like, should I be following pro sports at all? And I'm not trying to shame anyone out of this. Like, the world is dying. If something brings you joy, I do hope you enjoy it. But like, I think we have to start thinking about everything that goes into this. It's not just flipping on your TV and zoning, or your laptop or your phone or whatever. It's not just flipping that open and like watching a game and escaping, because what is happening in and around these games is contributing significantly to what it is that a lot of us are trying to escape. Another ethical, I don't even know what the noun is, another gross, unethical thing is the allocation and concentration of wealth in pro sports. Professional sports, and this is a sweeping comment, obviously it's different from one league to another, but the sports that we tend to talk about in this country when we talk about pro sports, those sports create unimaginable wealth for a small number of people. Some players, not all players, some players, some coaches, and some media, while also creating unimaginable, unjustifiable volumes of wealth for an even smaller number of people, the owners, the league commissioners, the media moguls, people in construction, all that kind of who are friends with these people, all while performing just enough self-promotable community charity to hide the fact that they are leeches on society. Like, there isn't already enough of that going on everywhere in society. You want to talk allocation, concentration of wealth? Gambling. Gambling feels like just another race to the bottom dollar. And we saw another striking example of this in a very weird place this week. There was a golf tournament, but it was a tournament made up of non-golfers. It's basically athletes who are really, really good at golf. So Steph Curry was in the tournament, and a guy named Marty Fish, who was a tennis player. And they're both very good golfers. And at the end of the event, Curry and Fish are basically neck and neck. And it gets down to the very last hole of the event, and Fish is winning. So apparently some fan had bet money on Steph Curry to win this tournament. They're not even real golfers, and people are betting on them. So the guy who bet on Steph to win decided He's going to fuck with Marty Fish's game because he wants to win. He wants to win his money. So on the very last hole with Fish ahead, as Fish goes into his swing and during his backswing, this fan yells something out to him on the very last hole of the match. Fish later told Ryan Russillo that in addition to that, the heckler yelled at him, quote, "Hey, Fish, fuck you, you suck." Curry ends up winning the match on the very last hole, on that last hole, the one where Fish was heckled and harassed. We talked about this a few, I think, months ago when Bradley Beal of the Washington Wizards had an incident where some fan was harassing him about, I guess, a bad game that Beal had, and the fan had bet on the Wizards. And we talked then about, like, this is going to get worse. There's the race for more money. There is more money to be made. But as with, look around the globe, how much of what is problematic right now, potentially out of control problematic, has come from the direct result of, well, there's more money to be made. So let's do this. Even if it's not needed, even if it's wrong. When non-golfers are being heckled and cursed at because some degenerate is betting on non-golfers playing golf, you don't need a lot of imagination to know this is going to get worse. It's very hard to look at that whole totality, you know, from the beginning of what we went over today, to look at the financial inaccessibility, how it's become more and more, you know, it was built up by the people and is becoming more and more a plaything for the wealthy. How it props up cable television, which is a zombie that by all rights should have been dead a while ago and is not doing the world any better by lumbering on. Despite the fact that all the wealth and interest that there is in pro sports, just like in academia, how there's fewer and fewer tenured professors and there's more and more underpaid people being overworked to do the job. Same thing in sports media. You have fewer and fewer. I'm very lucky. I do two pods that pay something. There's so many people who are doing pods who get nothing. So much of the sports writing that you read are by people who are getting paid nothing. Or a lot of people, I've had companies get me on this model. They'll hire me. Oh, yeah, it pays. And then you find out that you get like a dime for every 1,000 views or a penny for every 1,000 views. Some crazy numbers like that. Fansided was like that. So more and more people doing more and more of the work that's creating more and more wealth, but they're getting less and less and less of it. The carbon output question. The way it's seeped down into even the so-called amateur ranks, with the corruption and the lack of ethics in college sports, the allocation of wealth, the concentration of wealth. It's very hard, man. It's very hard to... It just makes me wonder. Someone at Grantland a few years ago wrote a really good piece about what the end of college football would look like. And a lot of it had to do with ethics. It had to do with the fact that most of the country, by their thesis, was going to steer their children away from football because of CTE and things like that. And so it was going to change so fundamentally, we would not recognize it. I wonder what these sports, you know, Adam Silver just talked at the All-Star Weekend, I think it was, about how Las Vegas, I'm sorry, not All-Star Weekend, that was months ago. Adam Silver just spoke, I don't know, at some event, and spoke about the likelihood that after the NBA signs its next media rights deal, which I think is after the 2025 season, they're going to look to expand, probably two more teams. Leading front runners right now are Las Vegas and Seattle. How can you talk about expanding and adding everything that we've gone over? You're adding more of that. How much can you add before... I feel like I do that a lot on the show. Like I start a question or an exclamation and I don't finish it. But I don't know how to finish this. I don't know where it goes. I will continue to talk about sports. And, you know, doublethink is part of our lives. I will still enjoy it, I'm sure. Next year I will watch the NBA. I think. But for the first time ever, I'm really starting to think, like, what's my end game with this? How much time do I spend thinking about sports, talking about sports, right? You do too, I guess. I'm guessing if you listen to the show, like, you're crazy about some sport. How long do we keep it up before what it's costing isn't worth what it's giving? On that bright note, please remember to follow us on Twitter at Jacobin Sports. You can email anything your heart desires to jacobinsports@gmail.com. Subscribe to our Patreon before global warming fries your laptop and you no longer can. Patreon.com/Jacobin Sports Show. That is all for this episode. I really want to thank all of you who are subscribers to the Patreon. I had a microphone break last year, and the only reason I was able to replace it was because I knew that I had enough supporters here that, you know, after a few months, like, it would be covered. The other pod would never be able to cover that. And I'm really, really, really just grateful that you've stuck with the show for as long as you have. I really enjoy getting to do this, and I don't take it for granted, and I hope that we can still do it for a while, but yeah, we'll see. Everybody take care of yourselves, be well, and if I crack and pay StreamYard $20, you will hear from me before August 5th. If not, you will hear from me then. Take care, everybody.